Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Dust off your chamomile tea. It's Tucker and Dale versus Evil time on the podcast this week. Hello, I'm Richard. With me is Abby.
Hello.
And not Anthony or Jamie. We've had a bunch of reasons, but we're going to have to proceed with just you and I, Abigail.
Oh no. How will we cope?
I don't know, but Abby and Rich versus film is what it's going to be. Anyway, Abby, it was your choice to do Tucker and Dale. All I know about Anthony and Jamie is that I think they had seen the film and were vaguely positive. I think Jamie's quote was, "Oh, I've seen that." That's all I can remember from him. From
No,
Anthony,
he said it was funny.
sure. From Anthony, I believe he liked it, but I couldn't tell you exactly how he felt. But they're not going to get to now. It's just me and you. But I vaguely think they liked it. So did you like this, or did you hate it and you're surprised to hear that?
Why would I put this forward if I hated
I present to you "Stop or My Mom Will Shoot," which Anthony
I
put
didn't put
forward.
that forward.
That it's perfectly acceptable for people to pick things they don't like to share in the misery.
Unlike the rest of you fucks, I am not a masochist when it comes to films. All
Right.
right? We watched Tucker and Dale vs. Evil from 2010, written by Eli Craig and Morgan Jurgensen. Directed by Eli Craig, starring Tyler Labine, Alan Tudyk, Carina Bodin, Jesse Moss, Philip Granger, Brandon McLaren, Gritty Lang, Shalene Simmons, Travis Nelson, Alex Arsenault. I could probably keep going. I don't want to. Adam Boshinesna.
I thought you didn't want to.
Yeah, but he had an interesting
Okay.
name.
So that is the Tucker and Dale versus Evil we're talking about. It's not Tucker and Dale versus Predator, not Tucker and Dale versus Kramer. I couldn't think of another one.
Wow. Such like if the gist.
Yep.
Affable hillbillies, Tucker and Dale, are on vacation at their dilapidated mountain cabin when they are mistaken for murderers by a group of preppy college students. Tucker and Dale mistake for a suicide cult.
I suppose so, because it isn't just, well, this is it. It's a horror comedy, and the conceit is, the old fuck with your expectations comedy mix-up, misunderstanding. In a way, it's about prejudice towards rednecks, but it's mainly just a goofy comedy where people accidentally kill themselves, mainly on spikes, it seems. They like the old spike death in this film.
Well, to be fair, it is one of the more common items you'll actually see in real life, is
I thought you were
something
going to
that's
say,
sort of.
it's true, but people always die on spikes in real life. It's like Mortal Kombat out there. Just people wandering along, running into sharpened tree branches.
What I'm saying is that many different things in life can be sort of spiked in shape, so there are more of them around than anything else.
Yes, both nails and wooden stakes exist in real life and therefore are presumably up for having accidents with. Yeah, it's not like you don't have to go to a lot of trouble is what you're saying to come across something spiky in the world. But you do have to have prejudice and a vague knowledge of horror tropes in order to misunderstand a situation and get scared and run into the spikes.
Yes.
But this is kind of the thing with the comedy, is it's a pastiche of kind of Deliverance style horror films, isn't it? And the classic slasher type where various attractive young teenagers go on a trip to a remote location and get bumped off by serial killers of one sort or another. And it's having a bit of fun with that idea by flipping it on its head and having the traditional baddies be the kind of heroes. And the college kids aren't exactly bad guys, one kind of is, but they're
Yeah,
more bumbling idiots.
one guy in particular has a heel turn, whereas the rest are just very nervous and excitable.
Oh, we've got a joint. Fun times. Ho ho hum. So you picked this, Abby, probably because you're a fan of Mr. Tudyk.
So you say probably. You know, you coy bastard. that is exactly why this got put up this week, is because I felt like giving Alan Tudyk a little bit of love.
Oh, well, I'm sure he's glad to hear that. Yeah, Alan Tudyk, I'm probably most aware of him through Firefly and A Knight's Tale. Those are the things that stick out in my mind that he's done. But he's done loads of voice work in cartoons and stuff. But he's a lovely, is he Texan? Ginger man?
He is. He's a ginger Texan.
Proper redneck.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, he's great in Firefly. That's probably one of his biggest, you know, roles that he's famous for. But, he, you know, he's across the board. He's in like, what's that one with a watch where he like checks his watch and goes, oh, like.
Death at a Funeral. A terrible film, but he's wonderful in it.
There's a few Death at a Funeral films. Like there's the, I think it's like a white one, a black one, and maybe there's an older one as well or something.
That was the weird thing. Death at a Funeral, the white edition, came out first, bombed at the box office, and then the black edition came out, and I don't know how that did at the box office, but I'm assuming it was equally bad, because the script was terrible.
Yeah, but Alan Tudyk, in the white version, gets a line, in just he's in the bathroom, and he's looking for his watch, and it's not on his wrist, and it's on his other wrist, and he just goes, oh, like...
Not doing it justice.
I'm not.
That's one to be seen.
That's the only good bit, though, so the rest of the film's kind of...
He's got one or two other bits of physical comedy that are good as well.
Alan Tudyk is funny in that film. The film as a whole doesn't make up for... doesn't complete its funniness, I guess. It isn't completely funny. I don't know, it was disappointing. I don't even remember it that well. I don't even remember that bit well. But that sticks out in my head as a... Isn't Alan Tudyk funny? And he is funny, and, you know, he's funny in this. And so you were like, let's share the Tucker and Dale love.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anyone else in it. Was there any other reason other than, I mean, you've just seen it and you liked it? Like, did you come across it for any purpose?
No, I think I watched it on Netflix originally or something like that.
You're just like, oh, Alan Tudyk, oh, this is a comedy, go on then.
Yeah, usually I don't go for horrors much, but this was a horror comedy, so I thought, eh, why not?
Also, you suggested off podcast that you thought it might have like a connection because of the cast, I guess. You were like, oh, maybe it's a film made by, what's his face?
I wondered if Joss Whedon had his fingers in it somewhere. I don't think he did, but you can tell that it's a like-minded set of people.
Yeah, and I mean, he did Cabin in the Woods, I think after this, technically. But Cabin in the Woods is quite a good spoof of horror films set in a cabin in the woods, and that is probably a little bit more clever, meta, more bizarre than this. But this is a nice simple concept that kind of plays out all right. I guess we should talk about the specifics a bit. Okay, so I guess my expectations were, I think I probably sat down and watched it with you, so there was no new, like, I don't think anyone was going to come to this new, even if we had the other guys. But revisiting it, I only remembered it with a vague, oh, that was fine. Like, I didn't have any deep thoughts about it. And then now that we're dragging it through the dirt or trying to analyse the little bits of it, I maybe would give it a little more credit than just, oh, it's kind of funny. But we'll see. Maybe I'll go back to my original feelings of it's just fine. But that's, I felt, you know, I didn't have any like, oh my God, everyone should watch this feeling about it.
Well, that's the thing. I've always got a little soft spot for films like this where you can tell that it was just a small group with a moderate amount of money and a decent script managed to do something good. It's like you didn't have a lot of clout behind this. You're not relying on star power, but you still manage to make something that's decent.
Yeah, so like kudos for people being invested in making something that they put a lot of effort into. Yeah, having a result beyond perhaps what you'd expect on the... Because it's a fairly low budget. It's almost like TV level film, isn't it?
You can only tell... Like, you only really see the cracks with some of the effects. But I do wonder how much of that was down to be... Because it was 2010. It's like effects were good, but they weren't flawless yet.
Well, in a comedy also, you have the get out of, well, if it looks a bit dopey, you're kind of satirising old, dated horror films that were cheap, or you're doing it so it looks funny. So there's a lot of, like, there's a wood chipper bit, and the blood that gushes out and hits one of the college kids in the face looks, that's, like, stupid, and why was she standing there, kind of, within projectile? Like, she'd be getting chipped by wood if it was being used properly. So, in a sense, the hokey low-budgetiness of some of the gore is fine because it's a comedy, so it's that get-out clause is there for you. Plus, you know, things like some of Edgar Wright's films, similar vibe, you know, people are getting bumped off or murdered or something, and it's meant to be funny, gruesome. So if it was terrifyingly realistic, you might, you know, your anus might not unclench.
Sure, it's a good point.
You know, there's a thin line between being on edge and laughing and genuinely being, you know, traumatised.
But I get, like, I want to give credit where it's due for a film that ticks all of the criteria on good. This was good. This was good. This was good.
Yeah, I would perhaps edge towards the acting of the college kids. I don't know if it's dialed up enough to be satirical, or if it's a little bit hokey. So when they're sitting in the car and they're saying college kids, like, they're kind of jockish. Like, they start chanting, like, Omega Alpha or something. Some fucking frat boy thing. So they're setting themselves up as typical American film college kids.
Well, that's problematic in and of itself.
Yeah.
Because how do you satirise vacuous knobs? By making them vacuous knobs.
I guess, but you kind of... One of the tick boxes for it's definitely trying and they are funny is the sort of semi-alpha boss of the group is this blue-collared shirt-wearing fucking kids with their shirts. Bloody college kids. But, like, the guy, what's his name? Dirk? No.
Chad.
Chad. I don't know why I thought it was Dirk. So Chad is the kind of leader of the group, because he's the most alpha of these douchebags. And he says kind of machismo, bravado-filled stuff, and then he has to do a little with his inhaler. That's his gimmick. So that's obviously funny on purpose. So I think, I would like them to be a little bit less cringy, because it seems like bad acting at times, but it could be argued that's a satire. I'm just, you know, is it enough to just them be corny? Because early on in the film, you don't know maybe the tone. So you'd like, oh God, they can't act. They're saying the lines, all the lines are terrible and they all seem like dorks because they're like, I don't know, like they deliberately seem like dorks. Maybe that's so you don't care when they're dead. So it's cathartic. What do you think?
That's true. You don't want to be sad. No one wants you to be sad in a comedy.
I guess this is a really dark comedy. Laughing through your tears. Oh, it's so true and so harrowing. Yeah, I'm thinking about it now. They have to be lame. Otherwise, if you had any shred of sympathy for these dorks, you'd be like, oh, that guy. And you can't have that when they're going to end up just dying. So, okay. I try to usher in some criticism, but I think it's covered itself.
Mm-hmm.
Tick boxes all round so far. But, you know, do you want to set up the film by explaining the opening?
Tucker and Dale are two... See, I don't like the term hillbilly, but it's what they're going for.
They are they are billies from the hills.
who have bought a vacation home up in the mountains.
In quotation marks.
Yeah.
That's not what the hill location is. The hill location isn't called quotation marks, like Missouri or whatever.
They don't know at the time, but the reason that the place was so cheap is because a serial killer had previously lived there.
But it looks like a fixer-upper as well, I would argue.
It is so dilapidated. Yeah.
You'd expect it to be cheap.
So they've bought this, they're going to fix it up, and that's going to be their vacation home. Then, on the adjacent property, these college kids have gone for a camping trip, or maybe a cabin trip, I'm not sure. And first they cross over a petrol station, and the first sort of balls out joke happens where Dale plays Dale, right?
Who plays Dale?
Dale is the bear of the two.
The bear.
Yeah.
To Alan Tudyk's twink. Like, Alan plays Tucker.
And
Tyler plays Dale.
Dale decides to pluck up the courage to go and talk to one of the college girls. But so that he has something to hold while he's going over there, he picks up the first thing next to him, and it's a fucking scythe. And he walks over, and he's really tongue-tied, and he comes over as an absolute creep. So that's why the college kids think they're serial killers, because Dale just fucks it up.
They come across each other on the road, I think, at first, and they, like, the pickup truck that Tucker and Dale drives kind of beater, and the college kids are having they're expositioning the fact that they're, you know, on spring break or some shit and going for a camping trip. And then these two, rednecks is, I guess, how they refer to this type of person. I mean, it's technically racist, but like, rednecks, hillbillies, just, you know, working-looking men who were a bit, I don't know, just southern gentlemen of a working-class persuasion come driving by, but they're, like, drinking beers and staring at them, which is creepy. There's no getting around that. Even as protagonists, they don't know how to behave socially. But so they're kind of like, we establish the college kids are like, oh, like, rednecks, and it's like Deliverance, and they actually, like, reference that film by making a joke about it. You know, so they're already thinking, oh, they're creepy because they look like, you know, southern redneck hillbilly types, isn't it?
Mm.
And those are infamous for their inbreeding and serial killing. So, like, I guess they're already worried about them in the boonies or whatever, in the sticks, whatever you call this part of the world. But like you say, the garage is a pivotal point where they actually have a run-in. But it's more like kind of awkward high school comedy stuff, isn't it? Because we establish Dale is the chunkier of the two. He's like a beardy. I mean, they both wear trucker caps. They both kind of dungarees, plaid shirt, scruffy, worn-out clothes, right? How would you describe Alan Tudyk's character, Tucker? You know, he went for bear as a term for Dale. But what Tudyk's what?
Well, he's more of the skinnier of the two, but he's just got, like, he doesn't have to do much because he's drawing on the redhead stereotype. As soon as you're in overalls with red hair in the woods, you're a serial killer.
But they both, you know, imagine rednecks, that's how they look. And they have the excuse of having all these items that could be horror murder implements because they're going to do the cabin up. So they have, you know, things you might use to do up a barn or cabin or whatever. Although a scythe is a bit weird. Like, are they going to be, like...
Well, no, that's in case it's overgrown with weeds and stuff in it.
Oh, so they're not, like, making bread or something from scratch. Not that size, it makes it sound like size of a kitchen implement. I mean, they're not cutting down wheat or whatever.
I love that's what you thought they would do.
No, but that's what a scythe is, part of the agricultural tools that is needed for bread making. You need to cut some wheat down with a scythe, then many, many steps of mill-based processing, then in the kitchen. I don't slice my, like, bread. I buy pre-sliced, but if I had bread that needs slicing, I wouldn't use a scythe. I may have sounded like that's what I would do. I'm as awkward as Dale is at communicating, because essentially he opens up with, are you going, like, camping and laughing in their face holding a scythe? And then saying how nice a cooler they bought from the store.
Anyway. Oh, I want to give just a quick side note. When you're watching this film, listen out for Tucker's shopping list. When he's in the shop.
I think the punchline is, like, because he's listing, oh, read me back the list. And there's, like, again, wearing the dungarees. If you don't, here's a tip. If you don't want to look like a creepy serial killer or a kind of freaky yokel who people are frightened of, If your dungaree breaks, don't keep wearing it. If you've got one strap on your dungaree, it's broken, throw it away. Get a new pair of dungarees and continue to look like a painter instead of a murderer. But the guy in the shop is reading back the list and it's like, you know, various things that could be tools but could be used to kill people. Long nails, hacksaws, like clamps, stuff like that. Stuff that they could use for two things, murdering or DIY. And then I think in there is like lubricated condoms. It's a very in the background joke because the college kids are like buying beer and being scared and creeped out by Dale and his giant tub of pickled eggs. Another very antisocial food. If you've got a big jar of pickled eggs, maybe don't eat them and try and chat up women.
Yeah. It's not the egg element immediately that's the problem there, but you will fucking stink of vinegar.
I don't know what item of food you're supposed to have to chat people up, but maybe don't eat while trying to go on the pull. Dating tips here, spoiler filled for a change. Yeah, but that establishes this college kids' fear, Tucker and Dale's like motivation for being there, and like we know early on they're not actual killers. Like there's a hint if you don't know what's coming that they might just be not. They might be because when they're looking creepily at the college kids, they could be murderers. But they establish quickly, Tucker and Dale, they've got a cabin, they're thrilled with how dilapidated and shit it looks, and it's theirs, and they're going to do it up, innit? That's why they're there. And the college kids, you know, let's smoke a doobie and have fun skinny dipping. That's their plan. Those are the two plans. That doesn't happen, because there wouldn't be horror or comedy otherwise.
And then they cross over mildly after that, but it's when the college kids decide to go skinny dipping that everything really kicks off. And Tucker and Dale are night fishing.
Because, you know,
which, in retrospect, a bit weird. But one of the college kids, the same girl that Dale tried to chat up at the petrol station, slips on one of the rocks, hits her head and falls in the water, so they rescue her.
Like a complete asshat as well. Like, it's a really... Like, she establishes herself as being a little bit derpy and accident-prone. But not, you know, she's not an idiot, but it is quite funny seeing her slip off the rock.
And I think that's the first pit stop for a quote. That's the reason that she falls is she hears Dale say something.
And what he says...
Says is Tucker's name.
Because... Oh, I get it. No, that's right. Because Tucker and Dale are sort of, oh, shit, look, there's a woman getting naked on a rock. And then Dale is trying to, like, not look. And, you know, they're getting a bit flustered. And Tucker is being a bit more brazen.
which brings me to my first quote. Tucker, when you see a college girl prancing around in front of you half naked, you do not call out my name.
You know, it's a funny bit and it kind of works and it sets up the misunderstanding that's crucial to their trips getting intertwined, isn't it? So it's like, you know, they're a good fumbling bunch. And they don't mean to be creepy is what it establishes as well. They're just awkward. And they try and rescue this girl and they take her back to their cabin because she's twatted her head open. But because they're kind of fishing her out the lake, I think all the other college kids freak out and think they're like, you know, kidnapping her or whatever. So, misunderstanding happened. Problem is afoot.
But not irreparable by this point.
No, at any point very early on, no one's dead. No misunderstanding is crucially gone too far. So, there's hope for our duo to sort it all out and it not to be funny and them to get on and be a harrowing tale of making friends with different people from different walks of life. But it just doesn't bother with that shit.
That's another thing I want to credit this with, is that Tucker and Dale do try really hard to keep a handle on the situation. It is all the college kids' fault that it completely slides out from under them. There's nothing they can do.
Yeah, fate plays a little bit into the... I mean, the scriptwriter plays the biggest hand. But, like, the idea, everything is happenstance, and it's affected by the assumed hillbilly scariness of Tucker and Dale, even though they haven't done anything other than be innocently awkward and look a bit creepy. to their eyes. Yeah, yeah. It's a nice, in a way, it is a nice, genuinely a good message about don't just assume if someone's a yokel or looks a bit rednecky that they're not super nice. They might well be. Could even be bowling, friendship and more material, as the film sets out to tell us.
I think, like, you in particular can attest to that. As a very large, burly...
I look like a hillbilly.
I'm saying that you are a very large, burly man that is sometimes misinterpreted, but in my experience at least, it doesn't seem to have done you any harm having people sort of vaguely subservient and helpful.
Yeah, having a body type a bit like an overweight Sasquatch and appearing in doorways and scaring people by accident, which does happen, people then, you know, usually check their prejudice and go, oh, all right. Yeah, okay. What is the name of the... I guess she becomes the love interest. What is the name of this woman?
Alison.
And let's go through the group of college kids, actually. They're kind of... nothing characters, a lot of them, because, you know, early on in horror films they kind of don't have enough time to be developed as people because they're just there to be bumped off, and that's the case in this to some extent, but they're kind of, I feel like we should go through them as a roll call at least.
Okay, I think they are the following: Jason, Naomi, Chloe, Chuck, Todd, Mitch, Chad, Allison. I think I missed out Mike.
It sounds like too many, but could be wrong. So, Allison is the love interest of Dale, eventually, and is kind of separated, first of all, from the group because she's tied her head open, as I say. Ooh. And she is... she's probably the nicest one of the group in that... I think she's one of the few that asserts her, don't be so judgmental, we don't know these people opinion, isn't it?
But so, yeah, she's... understandably startled to begin with because she's woken up in a strange place in a strange bread.
Now you're getting the hive thing confused again.
She's woken up in their cabin. Her claws have been changed.
Oh, yeah, it's been put on or whatever, yeah. Oh, yeah, she's wearing, yeah, because her claws are on the bank somewhere, isn't it?
And when Dale comes in, she's startled, which is fair.
I'm always fine when I wake up with a head injury in new claws in a cabin full of serial killer mementos. Yeah, so she's understandably freaked out, but she's calmed by Dale, who is still being awkward and trying to tidy up the place and being all like a high school teenager trying to ask for a prom date.
The sweetest thing when he thinks she's freaking out because he's brought her pancakes.
Yeah. No one should freak out about pancakes. But yeah, I think he suggests they like play a trivia game as well, and that's key to more misunderstandings later. So that's, you know, Dale calms her down, explains that, you know, they rescued her, tries to, you know, come across as suave and brave as well as a bit timid and scared of her, which is a nice switch on the, you know, roles. And I get, you know, Allison, for all intents and purposes, is just the nice blonde college kid who is attractive but a bit unfortunate. Like, that's, there's not much more to her I can't think of.
Well, you get the very brief glimpse into I don't know what you'd call it, but it's sort of when the academically bright are forced when they're forced into certain roles by their families, because she said her family wants her to be, it was either a doctor or a lawyer, but she actually wants to be a therapist.
Okay.
I think it was lawyer, because then it sort of changed to be a therapist. Right. And it's nice that there's even like the tiniest nod to that, because it does show it's like, well, yeah, everyone's got problems.
Okay. Yeah, but, you know, there's not, you know, none of these characters, even Tucker and Dale, I mean, Tucker and Dale have probably the most development because we're with them most of the time. But she's the nice one of the more prejudiced group. And then none of them are that prejudiced. They're just a little bit weary and, you know, being creeped out occasionally. And then once their friends start dying, that's kind of confirmation. Then you kind of, you're not so much prejudiced as you're having your beliefs confirmed. And then what's the... Is it Chad, you said, was the blue turtle? No blue turtles.
Blue turtle.
Chad, you said, was the blue...
He's the alpha male.
Of he's sort of the bossier one of the group, I guess. And he's...
trying to hit on Alison, and she's not interested.
Yeah, that's it. He's a villain as well, because he's quite forceful initially on trying to, like, make out with her or go out with her or whatever. And he's kind of a bit pushy, and he's got a stupid asthma inhaler. And, but he's a typical jock, preppy twat, whatever, I don't know. And then, I guess, the rest are sort of filler. We've got two ladies. One is a slightly ditzy, blonde woman. There's not a whole lot other than she's a ditzy blonde, I guess. And then there's the black girl. She... Again, I can't even think of adjectives, really, because they're just... They look like teenage college kids or whatever, and that's it. And, you know, then there's black guy with dreads who's a bit of a douche dork. You know, he's not a douche, he's just lame. They're all lame. I don't know, can you think of any adjectives to just differentiate between, like, emo kid who wears an orange plaid shirt, and... the other guy. Do you know what I mean?
No, but that's another trope, isn't it? That they're just like fodder.
Yeah, they're all kind of dorks. No, not dorks, but they're all douchebags. No, there's nothing to say about them. They're just people who end up getting spiked on things or shot in the face by themselves or burnt to death by accident. You know, the classics. Whereas Tucker and Dale are some 30-something southern men who are going to fix up a cabin, and it's been interrupted by an injury at a lake, and then some teenagers who have got, you know, a bit paranoid and scared.
That's when Chad starts to show himself as well.
That's the other element of this, isn't it?
Where he's adamant that he doesn't want to call the police. He wants to sort this out for himself because he's obsessed with hillbillies because his... I don't know whether to do the twist now or later, but that point, he thinks that both of his parents were kidnapped by hillbillies and brutally murdered, except his mum escaped, and that's how he came to be. So he's extremely anti-hillbilly, to the point where he actually wants to physically confront these men himself, man to man, in a fight to the death.
Yeah, I think they just about justify it. That's too many justs in that sentence. But I think it's okay that he doesn't want to get the... Because it's always like, oh, you're not getting the police, why not? This would all be resolved. And the police do get involved briefly. But actually, the very first scene of comedy we get with the police and Tucker and Dale is another misunderstanding. They're drink driving, so that's bad.
Yeah. Naughty. Naughty drink driving.
What are you going to say?
I was going to say, yeah, this weird sort of underlying ambiguity about Tucker and Dale's sexuality.
Well,
is
no, it's
interesting.
They're straight guys, but there is the let's make a implied dick sucking joke, because essentially, you know, they're trying to hide the fact they're drinking and driving, which they should go to jail for.
There's other stuff as well, the language is deliberately ambiguous as well.
Yeah, but
I think it's
the kind of deliverance thing, so that they come across like guys who live out in the middle of nowhere and are a bit gay because they're bored. Do you know what I mean? Like deliverance and the whole rape, squeal piggy stuff. That's a trope, I guess, of being a boony dwelling hillbilly, isn't it?
Yes,
I think that's what it's playing on, is are they a bit gay joke is like a trope. But, they have the sheriff or the police officer or whoever pulls them over. And, of course, Dale is trying to mop up beer from Alan Tudyk's crotch, and he gets stuck and his shirt opens up and they look like they've been, you know, sucking dick and driving instead of drink driving. Both dangerous.
Both naughty.
Yeah.
Naughty, naughty.
But they do have they set up the police officer then, and he comes back later. So the police are involved, and I think it's just okay that the guy is like, well, I like the guy has motivation to be, let's get these guys. Because the whole time the film is trying to set up Chad as this guy who's slowly becoming the typical horror villain, isn't he? He's the, in the end, he's the axe-wielding maniac. And it's like it's trying to pay that off, isn't it? It's going from reasonable douchebag college kid to psychotic maniac who should probably be stopped himself. And so I like the backstory being what you said, where he thinks his mum was a victim of some hillbilly serial killer and his dad was killed. But, it, you know, the spoiler is, turns out his mum was raped by a serial killer and he's part hillbilly and part serial killer then. So is taking after his dad or something? That's, you know, that's the clever bit, isn't it?
Suggesting there's some kind of hillbilly serial killer gene.
Yeah, do you inherit... I mean, you obviously inherit being a white person who lives in the sun and therefore gets a tanned neck, but or a sunburn on the neck. But you don't... Is there a gene? Is there a serial killer gene? A question this film answers as yes. Yes, there is. Or is it down to the upbringing of the, like, you know, I don't know. We don't know what his mum was like other than got attacked by hillbillies. Or a hillbilly. Anyway, the point is, Chad has this story arc going on, and it crosses the threshold at one point because they should get the police. And they are kind of, but oh no, phone reception. Let's deal with it ourselves. Let's tool up and get our friend back. Because they don't know she's dead, or they might think she's dead, but they don't know she's dead. So they try and deal with it themselves. And of course, we got to start getting some death now, right? That's the... Who's the first one to go is just... Oh, it is quite funny. It's the chainsaw beehive running, screaming, staked through the heart thing.
Oh, yeah. This is not going to make sense when you try and explain it.
Well,
but let's try.
Say what it was, but it doesn't make sense in that sentence.
No, well, the bit that won't make sense is that Tucker is cutting down some trees with a chainsaw. He doesn't realise that inside one of the
logs
is a beehive. So he goes straight through it. The bees attack, and he starts running to get away from them, still holding the chainsaw.
Uh-oh.
This kid sees him coming.
Fair enough.
Thinks he's being chased, but he isn't really. Tucker notices this guy is also running. He assumes, well, I assume that he assumes that he's also running away from the bees. So he just keeps going.
Yeah.
This kid then gets confused when Tucker overtakes him, isn't looking where he's going anymore, and runs straight into the spike of a tree.
Yeah. It's lovely. If you were pitching it, it is as funny. It's funny to watch. Obviously, when you're dealing with a comedy, saying what the jokes are, it's kind of stupid. But that was one of my... That's one of the standout moments I remembered from the first time, was the mix-up. Like, it was a good reason to get a chainsaw-wielding maniac on the run. It's like, bees or wasps or whatever are chasing him. That's good. There's a good misunderstanding and a really surprising and funny death. And it, you know, it's the tone setter. That's in a nutshell. That's all of what the comedy is. It's someone who looks scary, accidentally being even more scary, and an innocent derp getting killed. That, in a nutshell, is an example of the whole film. Like, that's it, isn't it?
Well, like, it's a many-layered joke. Because first it's funny seeing Tucker running through the forest with a chainsaw. Then it's funny that he's running with the other guy. It's funny that he overtakes the other guy.
Yeah.
It's funny that a guy kills himself. And then it's funny again later because they don't know that guy's dead until much later on because Tucker keeps running.
Yeah, Tucker doesn't see. As Alan Tudyk does a lovely sideways confused glance, like running with a chainsaw screaming, and then a funny glance of, who are you? Like, just on his face. So that's perfect. That's like, that's why it's one of my favourite bits. Like, it's a really good bit. But that's the first proper death count done. You know, that's okay. We've crossed the line in terms of there's going to be death now. And at this point, I mean, the friends don't find out straight away, or do they? I can't.
Well, that's the thing. They think that their friend was murdered rather than. So then there's a sort of wave of attempts. Then we won't go blow by blow per se, but trying to name drop the deaths in general. So, like, there's another one where...
Well, here's, before you say, The thing that makes the kids even more worried and concerned, Tucker and Dale, who have, like, I think Dale comes back, Dale is already playing Trivial Pursuit. Tucker comes back all bee stung and, you know, part of the, I don't love the joke about he's more hideous now and more scary, because I just, it's gross seeing someone with bee stings all over their face. Like, making Alan Tudyk look gross and disgusting, I get as a joke, but it's not my cup of tea. He's like, oh yeah, he's really creepy now. But they don't pay it off. It's not like he comes back and he freaks out the girl some more. She's like, oh, you were stung by bee. Like, it doesn't, that doesn't have enough of a payoff, because it's not like he takes his hideous face and scare, he just looks creepier, you know, so I don't know. That's just a small qualm I have. I don't think it's necessary as a joke. But, you know, they had the bee thing. It paid off in that regard. So he goes back and basically they talk to this girl, Alison. And Alison wants to go look for her friends because Tucker and Dale are, what, you know, trying to help her. And they go out to look. Like, you rest. You've banged your head like an idiot. You rest. We'll go out and find your friends. Tell them you're here and you're safe. Isn't it? Because Alan Tudyk's like, I saw your friend. He was running in the woods. There were bees. It was horrible. so they go out and they're taught. And Dale is saying how he was like beating her at Trivial Pursuit or whatever whatever question mark trivia game they were playing, like non-branded trivia. And so he ends up saying stuff like, oh, "I was really beating her," and then Tucker's like, "Oh, you always beat people and stuff." Do you know what I mean?
Oh, and he uses the phrase, "I'll finish her off later."
Yeah, so it's classic misunderstanding lines. Nicely done. Like, you know, I don't think it was too phoned in and too crowbarred in. If you don't,
they also leave that note on that log that says, "We've got your friend."
Classic. Yeah. So some witty work going on. Well done. All the kids are freaking out. And as you say, they locate the cabin, they're staying in, they're creeped out by it. They try and approach and find ways to get Tucker and Dale.
So very briefly.
Yeah.
When Dale and Alison are both digging a hole out the back for an outhouse, Alison's helping because she's become friends and she used to work on a farm. So there's
character development. Good.
Her friends think that she's digging her own grave, so they try to lodge another rescue. One of them comes running. One or more people get hit with a spade, one of which is Alison.
Yeah,
and
Dale
one of
turns,
her friends.
Dale turns, he's holding the spade, and he twats her into the grave. And then the other friend has a sharpened spike he must have made.
Yeah, oh, it's a javelin. It's like, so he swings his javelin to try and hit Dale, fails,
very
then
tricky,
falls,
yeah.
And gets spiked on their own javelin. That's one. Another one is where someone tries to come and stab Dale in the back. No, stab Tucker in the back, but Tucker moves, and the guy goes headfirst into a wood chipper.
That's right. And what's great about it is, I mean, it's gory and stupid and over the top. It's a lovely moment of, like, I'm going to stab this guy and get him. And he dives so fast into the wood chipper, it's, like, ridiculously lame. It's, like, it's so stupid and such a bad miss in a way. Oh, that's a bad miss.
And the length of time Tucker's trying to save him.
It's like Alan Tudyk holding these severed legs that are in the wood chipper, blood going everywhere. Like, just, like, you're not going to help him. And it's beautiful. It's so funny. And then I think, you know, blonde ditzy lady gets splattered with blood because lols. So, yeah, it's like that's your big wacky deaths on top of the initial one, isn't it? Yeah.
Is there anyone else killed before the meeting in the cabin?
Yes, the cop is.
Right. Earlier on, they established that there is a very dangerous beam in the dilapidated house. Nothing's going to come of that, is it?
I know. The Trivial Pursuit thing was like set up and it paid off as like a clever, you know, misunderstanding element. The beam swinging down with nails in it... When they do that by accident and no one gets killed, you're like, oh, well, obviously this will accidentally kill someone. And it's so cheap. Like, it's not a very inventive one. For me, that was the most... It's like a gruesome kill when it gets the cop by accident. But I felt like that was a crap one, not very original. You know? It's all very Home Alone and stuff, but...
But when the cop comes back later, He's initially sceptical of what they say.
It's the teenagers, and then Tucker and Dale when they're trying to defend themselves covered in blood, you mean?
Yes. Let me quote, in as far as I trust the internet to quote something. "Oh, hidey-ho, officer. We've had a doozy of a day. There we were, minding our own business, just doing chores around the house, when kids started killing themselves all over my property."
It is a hard sell. It's a hard sell. And it's that to me, is like the Tucker and Dale trying to get out of this situation, which, that is true. That is true. And that's a good moment to be like trying to explain that. And, the, you know, in fairness to the cop, he's not like, "Oh, well, you're obviously murderous bastards, but you are covered in blood, so he attempts," like, he's going to arrest them, isn't he? And he just leans on the thing. And
he gives them... He's a very good cop in the sense that, despite his reservations, he does allow them the right to speak and explain themselves.
Yeah, he's got
They do adequately well to assuage his doubt.
Yeah, well, also, he has the kids who have reported the, you know, murders or whatever, you know, the problem has been reported to this guy. He's got them in the cop car. He's trying to do, if anything, he's one of the few properly, oh, well, I suppose all the kids haven't done anything apart from be douchebags, but this guy hasn't done anything douchey. So it's the most sad death, I guess, is his own, because he hasn't even said anything vaguely prejudiced, or he doesn't, karmically, he doesn't deserve to die, if you see what I mean.
No.
I think at this point, Chuck is not in the cop car. He's off, like, still wielding an axe and being like...
Chad. Wood Chuck, ninja. Someone else.
Yeah, sorry, Chad.
Don't get them confused.
I have got them, yeah.
Chad's still out and about. One of the college kids was in the front seat, and he manages to get out.
Yeah, orange shirt guy.
He's got the cop's spare gun, I think, out of the car, and he manages to shoot himself in the face.
And, well, no, the cop gets twatted in the face by the spike that comes from the ceiling because, you know, somehow the poor maintenance means there's massive shards of nails that can be propped up occasionally and then knocked down easily. But he comes bursting out the door, I think, and then I think the cop's on the floor and his gun comes, you know, out.
That's what salvages that joke to an extent, is the cop walking around with that piece of wood sticking out of his head.
I'm not saying it's not funny. I'm saying I'm disappointed with how obvious it is, you know? But, yeah, we get, like, the next death then is orange shirt kid who's like, "I'm going to kill them for getting the cop and we're scared and, oh my God, Tucker and Dale are evil, not, you know, they're not versus evil yet." Anyway, they get the gun. He gets the gun and he can't fire it. And then Dale chips in with, like, "Oh, you got the safety on," which is much to Tucker's dismay. So the guy is trying to fumble around, get the safety off, and ends up shooting himself in the face. Which, I mean, that's terrible. I mean, I've never dealt with guns, or dealt with guns. I don't deal guns. I've obviously fired ammunition. No, I have no idea about guns, but I would never point the gun at myself trying to sort it out. But this guy does. He shoots himself point blank in the face.
So that's another two deaths.
Yeah.
Then there is a summit in the cabin. Allison manages to bring together all of the parties.
Yeah, because...
was a bit before that, actually. Yeah. They kidnap the dog.
Well, yeah, it becomes... It's kind of the shootout does occur because I think... Let me get this right. Chad, the blue-shirted asthma-loving... No, he doesn't love asthma. Psychotic, asthmatic Chad with his blue shirt. I think he gets the gun off his now dead friend and starts firing at them at the cop car. He's by the cop car shooting at Tucker and Dale. Tucker and Dale bail into the house, duck down, have an argument, and decide they're under fire. Time for a distraction and a tactic. So Tucker's going to go out the side, sneak around, rescue their dog, who we haven't talked about, but...
I would, like, Mr. Jangles, I think his name is. It's something like that. And that's probably, like, deep at the core of my like for this film, is not only does the dog live, but the dog is valued, he's imperiled, he is then rescued. They risked their lives to rescue this dog, and I could not be happier.
See, yeah, so that's a big tick box for you, I understand. anyway, like, Dale is firing the nail gun at the cop car, trying to, you know, I guess, fight off the scary teenagers who are trying to kill him. And so Tucker crawls around, army rolls like a noob, and gets to the dog, frees it, it goes the wrong way, he berates it, and then he gets caught looking pathetic, lying on the ground. And they string him up as a kind of bait to get the other guy. That's what their plan is.
They take off two of his fingers and send them as a message. I say they. Chad's the fucking maniac.
Yeah, because he's gone dark side now. He's gone from just, let's get them, let's not get the cops involved, to, fuck it, I fired a gun, I've got an axe, these guys are pricks. I'm like, you know, so at this point his other friends are like, oh, I don't know if we should. And he's like, fuck this, I got this. So they set up a rather elaborate dangling tripwire trap. I don't quite understand how it works. You trip a wire, it fires a massive javelin-like spike at you. Again, more spikes. So this isn't a spike death coming up, but another spike. The director is very fond of sharp bits of wood going into people.
This is my understanding that they do make some fairly specific references in this film to horror films we have not seen.
Sure.
So they may attribute...
We should say, me and Abby, not big fans of horror generally. So any little tropes like, oh, maybe the dog is referencing Mr. Jangles is a famous character from a fucking horror film. No idea. No idea. Home Alone is the references I get. You know. I don't know about... I know vaguely of tropes. They're everywhere. But yeah, we're not going to get any subtleties where it's just like the scene from, etc. and so forth. So, but then if Jamie and Anthony had been able to watch it and join us, maybe they'd shed some light. But as it is, you got what you got.
It's another pit stop for Quotrich.
Oh yeah.
When the spear, it penetrates Dale's trousers, but crucially doesn't hit any specific parts. And he says the following: I never thought I'd say this, but I'm glad I'm not hung like a bear.
That's good. True words. It's kind of an anticlimactic moment in a sense. I mean, it's funny, that bit's good. The javelin comes down, misses Dale's crotch by a bear penis length. And he cuts Tucker free. I mean, he's lost his fingers, sure. He's had them chopped off as a message to say, we got you, dude. But they kind of haven't got anything else, and I thought they had a gun. Maybe they don't have bullets, but I mean, I don't know. Like, it's they kind of just get him back because it's more convenient to have Tucker and Dale as a team together with Allison than it is to have them. Like, I guess the college kids can't have the upper hand too much because then you switch focus from who's meant to be the villain to whichever. Because it's nice because each group of people think the other one are scary murderers in a sense, don't they?
Mm. But after that,
yes,
sometime after that, is the great meeting where Allison brings them together, Dale sits at one end of a table, and Chad sits at the other end of the table, and they're about to talk it out. Where an insult happens that I need you to explain to me.
Well, I should say, Allison explains, when Allison is, like, Chad comes into the cabin, and Allison says, look, they're not kidnapping me, it's fine. And the friends that are there, I think it's like Chad and one of the girls. They, because the others are looking still in the forest or whatever. The first thought is, oh, it's Stockholm Syndrome, where you fall in love with your captors, is what they're thinking as well. So they have to sit down and tell sides of the story, because she's, like you said, going to be the kind of counsellor, because that's what she wants to be. So she's getting them to say their explanation of events. Yeah.
The following exchange... Allison, wait, everyone just stop for a second. Let's talk about this, okay? Nobody wants to hurt anyone. Tucker, as he's cradling the hands that is now missing fingers, you could have fooled me, Chad. Ooh. Fuck off, hillbilly. Tucker, eat shit, body perm. Body perm?
Who was the one saying body perm?
Tucker. Tucker says, eat shit, body perm.
See, because Dale is a hairy man. He's a little chunky monkey with a big beard. You know, medium length hair. Why isn't he body perm?
I don't know. I like it as an insult. I may adopt it myself, but I do want to know what it means first.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think if someone's all hairy and curly, sure. If they're just a college kid, I don't get it. Does he have a perm? He has sort of slightly stylized hair. No, can't answer you. Answers on a postcard there, I think.
Okay. That's a shame. But Dale, he's down with having this little meeting. He has a cathartic little speech explaining the situation and how he feels about things. But Chad's just like, fuck this noise. I don't care. You're a murderer. Piss off.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, Chad doesn't have an excuse to keep being a murderous bastard, because he's obviously turned the corner into his psychotic dark self. But he is still a bit sceptical, but essentially, you know, it hasn't gone tits up, really. And I did like Dale's reaction of, like, he's nervous, because he's frightened of this guy across the table from him. But he's kind of, he's talked his side of the story, and he does have a kind of, oh, yeah, I feel better, this is good. Like, he's almost like he's trying to win Alison's affection by making out like she's a good counsellor, but he's still frightened, so. And he wants everything to be fine, so he's, it's good, yeah, I feel better. Like, I like that reaction. But I think the other guys kind of barge in, and that re-intensifies the situation, and Chad's, like, flipping tables and not going to have it. And I think the black guy with dreads comes in, and he's got, like, a weed whacker on full blast, and he goes for Tucker and Dale, and we have another miss. The old bull Toro happens, and he bludgeons and chews up the face of the black girl who's in the room, and that continues the fight so that people are like, fuck you. And then I think Chad throws a lantern, again missing the intended targets, hitting the black guy with a weed whacker. He catches on fire.
Oh, but he's not too bad on fire, but...
Yeah, he catches his foot on fire.
One of the other girls,
blonde ditzy girl,
she picks up what she thinks is water, but it's probably methylated spirit, something like that, to clean paintbrushes. Yeah. Throws it on him, he goes up in flame, dies.
Yeah, Tucker and Dale are kind of like, no, don't, but yeah.
Isn't she standing next to
a shit ton of gasoline and type flammable? This is the thing, conveniently, this location is full of like methylated, like it's full of flammable liquids and things that are going to go boom. And so that's another, oh, we got a big spike on a beam that's going to come loose at any time. Or we just happen to have loads of flammable stuff that'll easily catch fire and explode. So it's a bit contrived, I would say, at times. It's not perfect, but it's a means to an end. Like, this, what else are you going to do? You know, you have to have something happen.
I think that mops up everyone except for Chad and Alison then.
Yeah, so the people who are injured in the room die in the explosion. Chad is stuck in there because he's being held back by the girl who's had her face mutilated by the weed whacker. And so he's stuck in there trying to escape, but Alison, Tucker and Dale get out as the cabin explodes. A cabin that was full of like creepy serial killer stuff as well. Like, it was
probably for the best, to be fair.
Yeah. There's many deaths in it now, so fucking... But they had, like, I did like the joke where Tucker and Dale, when they discover, this was at the start of the film, they discover the cabin and they're thrilled with it, but it's got like bone necklaces or bone, like, what are those things you put above a crib? Like a
mobile.
A mobile of bones.
And doesn't Dale say something like, oh, a hunter must have lived here?
Yeah, they have a plausible excuse for like all of the creepy shit. They got like, oh, they must have been a big fan of news, because they have like clippings of serial killer stuff, like of all the murders that happened. I did like their explaining away of all the serial killer goodies in the creepy house, you know. But anyway, the place explodes. Everyone except Chad is killed. And then he's left exactly like Harvey Two-Face, the old burnt half of the face, you know, Harvey Dent. Yeah. You know, he doesn't flip a coin. He just has his asthma pump and an axe and stuff. But he's left half burned.
Oh, no, that's later. It's fine. I was going to say something, but it's later on.
His hair, like some of the versions of Harvey Dent, is very complimentary to his burnt face as well, because it kind of poofs up nicely and goes well with his burnt face, I thought. It looks kind of a dashing for a hideous half-faced villain. We see he's full monster and psychopath now because he's survived this explosion and is injured and all that. The classic tropes ticked off some more. And then I guess the Tucker and Dale retreat. They get to a sawmill because Alison is kidnapped.
Yeah, Chad has totally lost his mind by this point.
Yeah.
And he kidnaps Alison.
While
and
they're all, like, knocked out and stuff after the explosion, is it?
And ties her up in the sawmill.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the thing. They crash the car. How did they crash the car?
Which car?
They hit a tree. They're trying to drive away. They get into the truck.
Yeah.
Tucker, Dale and Alison. And the dog, I assume. But, like, they're so panicked that they hit a tree.
Yeah.
They're all knocked out, and that's when Chad gets Alison, takes his sawmill and ties her up.
Yeah, contrived, but we got to get to something. We need a climax, damn it. Yeah, okay, yeah, so sawmill, nice and creepy. You know, I think also it ties into the serial killers of old that were linked back to Chad's past and, you know... The serial killer that raped his mum and made him, and that they have the revelation about that in that room because there's like evidence in this long time abandoned sawmill with relevant evidence in.
Yeah. Tucker's injured, so he gets left with the car and it's jangles.
Oh.
So it's just Dale and Alison.
Yeah. She's all tied up.
In the following parts. Yeah. In the sawmill is when Dale gets to wear the classic get-up of a serial killer, like actual equipment-wise, but he's actually the hero. So he's got on, like, the welding mask, and he's got on the like, leather aprons and stuff of heavy industrial workers. And those sort of the things you put over your boots to help you climb up, like, trees, telegraph poles, the little spike things. Yeah. And he's, I think he's got a chainsaw as well, is he?
Yeah, he's kitted up like a maniac.
Fucking amazing.
It is great. And it's like you say, so that's like the joy of the film is the flipping of tropes. So people who enjoy kind of this kind of slasher flick, it's nice to see it flipped and kind of... If anything, it's a nice hero piece for loser rednecks. Like, yeah, I'm the hero and I get to be like scary but also charming and nice. Like, it's a good one for, you know, awkward... chubby redneck guys. It's their film, really, isn't it? They're the heroes. But yeah, he gets to look like a maniac and come to Alison's rescue, free from her ropes as she gets closer and closer to the buzzsaws in films. If you're strapped to a buzzsaw, when is that ever, like, tense? Like, I think maybe it's too many Bond films, maybe it's just too many films in general, but whenever someone's strapped to something that's going to hurt them as they slowly move towards it, they never fill me with tension.
I'm trying to think if I can at least give Chad credit for putting her head first rather than feet first. I think he put her head first, which is the smart thing.
Well, it's smart unless you want to cause trauma and pain, because then you can have your vagina slitted even further by a saw and live. Whereas, you know, straight away... I mean, what's at this point, he's just crazy, is he? Like, no, because he doesn't care about getting her apart from he wants to get them.
Well, he thinks that she's betrayed him. He's got this invented relationship in his head that she has with him when really one does not exist. So he's all butthurt that she's having... that she's in love with Dale.
Okay, it makes sense. But yeah, the weird takedown here for me is... the way that they beat him, he's got asthma, and Dale, because he's a trivia guy, he knows that... what tea
there's an active ingredient in chamomile tea that...
can set off your asthma.
Yeah.
And they blow some chamomile tea that happened to be in the wood mill, because, you know, someone drank... like, some British guy who worked in the middle of nowhere in America loved chamomile tea. And he left it there when the business stopped. And so they dust it off and blow it. And they throw it in his face or whatever. And he has a little coughing fit. But then, you know, falls to his death so it can be more spectacular. Or does he fall to his death? Horror trope number 45. The psychopath lives probably. Well, it's established at the start. The events of this film happened before. Like, is it 3 days or something? 3 years?
I don't remember the exact date, but at the start of the film there is a found footage style thing, I think, but it's of a legitimate journalist and her cameraman going in.
I think an illegitimate journalist. Because she's like, oh, we don't need a press pass. We're just going to fucking nosy around in the cabin.
True. But yeah, they nosy in and he attacks them, but it's after the events of the film.
Yeah, nice found footage, like, gag as well. So, yeah, so it's essentially saying that Chad has survived his asthma and fall and burning of face and is still out there murdering people. So, you know, there's potential for a Tucker and Dale versus Evil 2.
I think, based on what I read, I think they have a script. The problem is, like, raising funds and making sure that everyone's time actually lines up to do it.
Yeah, and thinking of the appropriate title, because you can't just call it Tucker and Dale versus Evil again. You have to have, like, Tucker and Dale versus, I don't know, Evil Dead, like, because then he's come back from the grave. Or, like my terrible attempt earlier, maybe you just add in Predator or Alien and have it versus them or something. But again, yeah, you have to have Chuck back, don't you? Like Chuck the asthma axe villain. Harvey Chuckface. Two-Face Chuck, the asthma maniac. I mean, I can't even think of a catchy name for him. So he's a killer in the woods. The college campus killer? No, he doesn't kill on college. I don't know. There's definitely potential for a Tucker and Dale versus again, I think.
You know? Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, you know, nice tying into the tropes of horror coming back again. Anyway, so the last little bit then is will they, won't they, Tucker and Dale have survived the suicidal college kids attack and the one guy who was actually trying to kill them properly and, you know, might have succeeded. But yeah, Allison and Dale go on a bowling date and make good friends and start kissing while...
Wait, there was a bit before that.
Go on.
The bit in the hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
When Tucker's in hospital, he's fine. They've replaced his fingers, one of which with the finger of a woman.
Which does beg the question, okay, funny stuff, ha ha ha, the wrong finger. But who is this long-nailed finger belong to? Maybe it's the reporter, the woman who comes later. They find, but then the finger would be rotting for a few days.
I don't know, Rich. It does not say.
It's a funny mystery finger has been sewn on. Tucker's much better. He's worried that, you know, Dale is still a loser. And that his... Because all the way through, Tucker's trying to give him confidence and tell his friend how he should be more, you know, just more confident in himself and be able to chat to girls and stuff. So the story arc has come full arc and has got to the point where Dale has successfully negotiated a date with Allison.
Yay! And then we meet his friend. His gnarly, snaggletooth friend who's also at the bowling alley, I think because it's probably like...
Well, there's just more than two people on a team in it.
Yeah. And Dale is trying to give him the same advice that Tucker gave him. So he decides to go and punch the first woman he finds.
Well, I think he starts off probably chatting, but in the background we see him basically caveman a girl over the head and drag her away while everyone runs away screaming. And we kind of finish with Dale and Allison kissing and kind of saying whatever to what was going on behind them. Because at no point did this film try and seriously get away with this and say, oh, this is a believable thing. This is always a comedy. And it is consistently funny. So, like, I feel like any criticism I would have is just being churlish because I'm laughing, I'm enjoying, I'm liking the sort of, you know, mix-ups when I'm not going, oh, that's a bit contrived. You know, so... Tonight it's a fair ending. I guess it was a sort of rom-com as well, in a way. It's a confidence-building exercise for chubby, bear-like rednecks to be like, don't be all creepy with your scythe and saying weird shit. Just come out and be yourself. You know, play trivia in the woods. Maybe not in the woods. Maybe, you know, bowling alleys are a bit... Actually, it's on the ending. Bowling alleys aren't all that great for dates.
I think probably the tip that I would offer people is if you're going to go out into the woods for any reason,
Are you saying if you go down to the woods today, it's a big surprise because the teddy bears are getting killed by college kids? What?
No, what I'm saying is if you don't want to be misconstrued, maybe dress up a little bit for the woods so people don't look at you and think you're a crazy mountain man or hillbilly.
Maybe just don't drink and drive. And if you are drinking and driving, don't stare at people like you're a weirdo. That's the first mistake they make, is they, you know, have a little look in the mirror. If you think you're going to look intimidating, maybe dial it back a notch. I'm not saying don't look countryified. Don't gawk and stare slack-jawed. That's a tip. Then you won't get misconstrued so easily. Do learn trivia. That'll help you out. Trivia, very helpful in this film, saves Dale's life more than once. Possibly costs the lives of many other people, but we won't dwell on that. That's what we've learned. But what metaphor, Abby, can we say to sum up our thoughts? Because essentially, we have to sum up the fact that we thought it was quite funny.
We do. That's always the problems with comedies. I'm just trying to see if I can quickly find out what the name of that board game was, because it's driving me fucking nuts.
It was fake, wasn't it? It was like Trivia, the game.
I know.
Trivial Pursuits. Everyone thinks it's, a lot of people think it's called Pursuits, but it's actually Trivial Pursuit. So maybe it was Trivial Pursuits.
No, it's like Quizzler or
Quizzle Sticks.
Anyway. For my metaphor, I think the first thing I thought of was a food. I'm not doing it because you're a bastard. Now I'm going to have to do the food one. Don't make fun of me. I haven't done a food one for ages.
No.
But I think it's one of those own brand ones. Like, say you're at a supermarket you've never been to before. It's brand new. You've got no information about it whatsoever. And you take a punt on their own brand Jaffa Cakes. Mm. You know that that's a little bit of a risk. Because sometimes they're fine. Sometimes they are not fine. Mm. Sometimes they're the horrible square ones.
Sometimes you watch a satire and it's Sex Drive and you go, oh God. Which I think Alison, who's in this, is in Sex Drive. And that's one of those kind of American Pie style comedies for stoners and college kids. And it's just awful.
But in this case, you were lucky. You've got a perfectly reasonable Jaffa Cake that you enjoy and will buy again. But you had no way of guessing that from its outsides. Other than you were getting a Jaffa Cake, you didn't know if you were going to get a good or a bad one.
So you see Tuck and Dale, you see, oh, it's a horror comedy. It's not like Shaun of the Dead. It's not one I know and love. It's some other slightly odd one, and it might be a bit bad. And then you taste it, and it is different. It's clearly maybe an inferior, cheaper product, but crucially, it hits the box. It's tasty. You're not going to be complaining if someone has that brand of alternate. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
So Tucker and Dale, take a punt on it. It is worth it. Yum, yum, yum. Yeah?
Yes.
Let's think of a quick one. They wear trucker hats, and, you know, there was a time when trucker hats were super in with the skater people and were, you know, not the height of fashion, but were very wearable outside of, you know, truck drivers and lumberjacks and stuff. But in a way, it's a kind of comedy trucker hat, because it's funny, because it's like, oh, you know, what was the one? He had, like, Giver on his
Giver.
Hat. And it was not, because you said the actor picked that hat to me off podcast, did you? Or
yeah, he brought it himself, but there was no rationale for it in what I'd read, so I can't tell you why.
He's a nice guy, so he has a hat that says Giver, but also has an apostrophe, so it's Give Her. I don't know why it said Giver on his hat, but anyway, it's kind of you sort of read it and trying to find extra meaning. Maybe I'm just missing the point. But anyway, this film is like a comedy trucker hat. It's got a little joke on it and a little thing. So it's funny, but it's also creepy because people who wear trucker hats fundamentally are a bit off-putting because they're like cheap, you know, made in Taiwan type, just foam and plastic and ugh. But, you know, if you can pull off a comedy trucker hat and be lovable and nice anyway, that's kind of what this film is. It's both creepy and funny. It's the perfect balance of horror and laughs. And I guess that's slightly epitomised in the right person wearing a trucker cap, I guess.
You've reminded me of something else, which might be a better metaphor, but I don't know if I should trade.
Add it on to the pile.
But it's that I don't know if meme. I don't know if it got as far as a meme, but it was that picture of a person wearing little bear glove puppets, and then it had just the caption, "I will kill you with my bare hands."
Ah, that's good.
So it's like that. It's kind of, it's cute and funny, but it's also threatening.
And it's that the type of humour in the film is about the misunderstanding, and that's good. It's good. I'll kill you with my bare hands. Ha ha ha! Oh, that's disturbing. Yeah, I get you. Anyway, we liked it. We didn't even need these metaphors. If you just say you like something, people understand your meaning. You don't need to confuse it with a metaphor. But damn it, spoiler-filled is partly about tradition, and it would feel wrong not to finish on a metaphor, so we've tried. We've tried, damn it. Just you and I, Abby. We've faced up to evil and Tucker and Dale, and we've tried our best to fumble through some thoughts on it.
Was that a Mundo, dude?
Yeah, so that's us done. Another podcast, another time, another film, another combination of the four of us, or less than four of us. Bye.
Less than four of us. We can make it if we try. Less than four of us.
But you not one person, because one person is just weird talking to yourself. Bye.
Bye.